You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Hello and welcome from me. I'm Rob Daly. This edition of the Euro Show comes to you off the back of an unusual and difficult day at Euro 2020. The world has been thinking of Christian Eriksen, his family, his friends today, after the Denmark international collapsed during the first half of their tournament opener in Copenhagen against Finland. He is at the time of broadcast in a stable condition in hospital. It was a moment that seemed to pull everything into perspective so swiftly, one where you could only think of his loved ones and your own. We wish Christian a full and speedy recovery, and UEFA has thanked both teams for their exemplary attitude. With me is co-host Chris Parrott and European football expert Andy Brassel. Chris, it has been an emotional day.
Yeah, it really has, Rob. So initially the match at Parken Stadium was postponed after just over 40 minutes of the first half. Both teams left the pitch. Now, following a request made by both sets of players, it was agreed to restart the match a couple of hours later. The last 5 minutes of the first half were played. There was then a five-minute half-time break followed by the second half, which Finland went on to win by 1-0. Now, during the wait between the medical emergency and the game getting back underway, we had a fairly extraordinary moment of unity when the whole stadium was singing the Denmark star's name. There were 15,200 supporters in Copenhagen. The Finland fans at one end started shouting Christian, and from the other end, the Denmark supporters boomed back Eriksen. This was after a message had gone up on the big screen with the good news saying that Eriksen was stable and awake in hospital. Then, as the teams re-emerged back out onto the Parken pitch, we had another hugely respectful moment. The Finland players were first out. And here's what happened when the Denmark team re-emerged out of the tunnel. So they were applauded back onto the pitch by their opponents, led by the Finland team. And the coach, Kasper Hjulmand, the Denmark coach, then gave a little speech as the Denmark team were all in a huddle before the game got back underway. Extraordinary emotional scenes at Parken Stadium.
And you saw Kasper Schmeichel as well, didn't you, during that break in play, going around as players came back out and speaking to every player, hugging them as it looked set for the game to get back underway. Andy Brassel, it was a day where it felt like the football community really came together.
I think sometimes, and especially in the opening days of a tournament like UEFA 2020, it does well to remember, hopefully in a less grave situation than this normally, that football is about... This tournament isn't just about reaching those of us who obsess over football. It's about getting the world talking. It's about reaching people who maybe don't watch football all the time. And I think it's really important, especially in bringing future generations into the sport and getting them to be passionate about it and love it, to create that connection. It's about telling them that football is not just about winning or losing. It's about representing what you believe in. It's about showing dignity. It's about being a good person as well. And the way that those Danish players stood for their guy and stood for their country, I thought was absolutely extraordinary. And the Finnish players as well showed great humanity. And so whereas it wasn't a series of events that anyone wanted to happen, I thought the way that Denmark and Finland dealt with it was absolutely exemplary in keeping with the very best of international football.
Well, let's hear from someone who's echoing your thoughts, Andy. The Denmark head coach, Kasper Hjulmand, spoke to in his press conference afterwards about Christian Eriksen via a translator.
First of all, I have to say sorry in advance if it gets a little emotional right now. It was a tough night. We are all reminded that of what the most important thing in life is, and that's to have valuable relations. People we have close to us, our family, our friends. And we have a group of players I can't praise enough. I couldn't be prouder of these people who take such good care of each other.
And he should be proud. It was an incredible moment when the Denmark players circled around Christian Eriksen on the pitch. This is what the UEFA president, Alexander Čeferin, said as this was unfolding. Moments like this put everything into perspective. I wish Christian a full and speedy recovery and pray his family has strength and faith. At these times, the unity of the football family is so strong, and he and his family carry with them the good wishes and prayers of everyone. I heard of fans of both teams chanting his name. Football is beautiful. And Christian plays it beautifully. And I think we can all agree on that. So we wish Christian Eriksen the very best on his recovery. The game, as you mentioned, Chris, did eventually resume into that second half. And an occasion for Finland, albeit in unusual circumstances, whereby they've made history.
Yes, they have. They've won their first ever match on their debut at a final tournament, not just in a Euro, but they've never reached a FIFA World Cup either. They won the game. They were very, very dignified in the goal celebration as well, in keeping with that unity and that respect that was shown by everybody at Parken Stadium today.
Yeah, so the winning goal was scored by striker Joel Pojampolo, and he had this to say about Eriksen after the match.
Yeah, first of all, my thoughts go to the family and friends from Christian Eriksen. I really hope that everything is going well. The information that we got, that everything at the moment is stable, everything is good, and he was awake. And he was also wishing that we will continue playing. And we made a decision together with the Danish team that we continue. And it's just amazing to see how football connects people, how all the fans here from Finland and from the Denmark side are shouting his name and loving the game. And obviously, that's the first of the thoughts.
Well, it wasn't just Pojampolo who played his role in the win for Finland. His goal, a header coming just before the hour, but there was a good penalty save as well from Lukas Radetzky. Lots made about him, the Bayer Leverkusen goalkeeper ahead of this tournament. He denied Pierre-Emile Højbjerg from the penalty spot. And Andy, for Finland, a result that will mean a great deal for them on what is a historic tournament.
Yes, it will. And it's not surprising to me either that Radetzky or Pojampolo had a big influence on this eventually. And of course, before the tournament, there was a lot of people, especially Premier League watchers, who were very keen on Timo Pukki and thought that he really held Finland's hopes in his hands. And of course, he's absolutely vital to them. But then again, I think those who watch the Bundesliga will know that Pojampolo is a player who's been held up by injury here and there, but is a very, very dangerous centre forward. You look at the fact that they have Marcus Fors off the bench, who's a real growing talent and scored in their win at the Stade de France in recent times. So it's clear that Finland have a little bit more punch than they're given credit for.
Yeah, and you mentioned Teemu Pukki there. He spoke after the match as well, of course, also saying that, you know, the result was not quite as important as normal given what had happened, but also saying that he admitted it was more tense than normal. I think often you hear after the match, you know, sometimes players kind of fudge that, but this was the biggest game in Finnish footballing history, and to win it, my word, what a start. And as you know, we've discussed on some previous shows, 5 years ago Iceland in their debut, you know, got off to a good start and went on that incredible run. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen to Finland necessarily, but you could see the joy. It wasn't unconfined because of what had happened earlier to Christian Eriksen, but, you know, they have just probably had their, well, I would say definitely had their best ever result in international football.
Well, also in Group B, one of the tournament favourites, Belgium, breezed past Russia at St. Petersburg Stadium by 3-0. Romelu Lukaku scored twice, either side of a Meunier strike, and Lukaku dedicated his first goal to his Inter Milan teammate Eriksen.
Little Dries Mertens, it's come to Lukaku, who would not miss from there. Chaotic Russian defending. Lukaku in glorious isolation with as much time and space as he would wish to feast upon.
Well, we saw Lukaku, Chris, go up to the camera and, as we heard there, pay tribute to Eriksen.
Yeah, Chris, I love you, of course. And it was another poignant moment, of course, someone who's, you know, played with Christian Eriksen all season long. But much like Italy, I think, on opening night 24 hours before, Belgium, with a very, very impressive performance. And Romelu Lukaku, you know, we kind of expected it given his goal record for the national team and given what he's done, Andy, this season with Inter, helping them win the Scudetto. But he looked at ease, supremely confident. And my word, at the moment, if he gets a chance, he takes it.
Yes, and things have changed for him so much while he's been at Inter. He was always a little underappreciated before. He did really great things in English football, but never really got quite the credit that he deserved. But as with all great players, he looked at how he could take it up to the next level. He changed his diet. He changed the way he trained as well. And it's really worked for him. Clearly, Antonio Conte at Inter has had a huge influence on him. But then you look at how Lukaku has grown and grown and grown this season. And it's strange because going into this campaign, you look at them lacking Kevin De Bruyne for this, although we expect him to play, lacking a fully fit Eden Hazard, who had a little interesting little cameo actually as substitute, in which he showed some really nice touches. But I think pretty much any team losing two players like that from your starting lineup, it's not great for your hopes. But you always had the feeling, I think, going into this tournament that Lukaku could take it on his shoulders and do so much on his own. And that's exactly what it looked like tonight.
Yeah, he really looked like the leader in that Belgium team. And I saw a stat afterwards, Rob. He's been involved since the end of the FIFA World Cup 3 years ago for his country. He's been directly involved in 25 goals in his last 19 games. That is an astonishingly good record.
Andy, is he a better player, having been at Inter? Has he learned more there, do you think, as well?
Yeah, I think he has. And what he's shown, I think, is an extraordinary open-mindedness since he's been in Italy. Now, we know he's someone who's highly intelligent on and off the pitch. And he's open to new ideas, new cultures, multilingual, of course. But I think what he's done is worked on bits of his game that don't come naturally to him, like playing back to goal. And he's really embraced all of that, even the stuff that doesn't come naturally to him. And it's made him really quite an extraordinary all-round player. And you can just feel that confidence at the moment as well. It felt at the end of Inter season that he needed a little bit more football, almost. And I guess there's not a lot of players who can say that at the moment.
Not.
Because, you know, the players have made an extraordinary effort in the last 15, 16 months, as everyone has, to get football back where we want it to be, in front of our eyes, in our stadiums and on our TV screens. But Lukaku, it just feels as if he's ready to give so much more. And that's great news for Belgium.
His finishing is so effortless, isn't it? I mean, even his second goal was just so cool. Actually, we can hear from him now. Here is Romelu Lukaku.
Well, I'm really happy with the win, but for me, it was difficult today to play because my mind was with my teammate, Christian. I hope he's healthy and, you know, I dedicate this performance to him. Yeah, I cried a lot because I was scared, obviously. You know, we lived strong moments together for a year and a half. I spent more time with him than with my family. So, you know, my thoughts was with him, his girlfriend, his two kids and his family. Yeah.
Romelu Lukaku there, and just goes to show just how close the footballing family is, as he was speaking about Christian Eriksen there. Just to pick up on something that Andy said, he used the word confidence. And I saw Romelu Lukaku a lot at the end of his Manchester United career, when in the end he was sold to Inter, and he does look, confidence-wise, a completely different player now. And when he gets those opportunities, he never looks like missing it. And I think we have to give credit to Conte and to Roberto Martinez, who have given him that leadership role, really, I think, within both of their teams. And they are reaping the benefits now, because there is not a striker, I don't think, in better form at this summer's Euros currently than Romelu Lukaku.
And they have a strong squad. We saw that from their options off the bench. Thomas Meunier, who I think it's fair to say, Andy, has had a difficult first season at Borussia Dortmund. Not easy to fill the boots of Achraf Hakimi down that right-hand side. But when he plays for the national team in this system, doesn't he just seem to come alive, even off the bench, coming on and getting his goal?
And a real opportunity for him. We saw him get involved straight away. And we saw that even before the goal. And, you know, it fell quite nicely for him. And he did very, very well to tuck it away. He does get into those advanced positions so well. But there's a lovely balance, actually, to this Belgium side. And there have been people out there who have talked about the defence and talked about the age of it. Dedryck Boyata, I thought, came in and played a very, very good game In between Alderweireld and Vertonghen. And Vertonghen has played a lot of minutes for Benfica this season. He's an incredibly fit player still in his 30s. But I thought Thorgan Hazard did a really good job on the other side as well, allowing Carrasco to do some different stuff that he does to Atletico Madrid a little bit further up the pitch. But it just shows what an incredible depth there is to this Belgian side from front to back.
And I thought, again, we saw just how comfortable they are in that 3-4-3 formation. You mentioned Carrasco there. He could easily have played as one of the, you know, the wing-backs, if you like, but he played in the front three, and they just seem to seamlessly roll now, this side. And I think you saw precisely why they are the number one ranked team in the FIFA World Rankings. Interestingly for Munir, the first ever player, by the way, to score a first-half goal as a sub at a Euro. So a bit of history this evening, and he was very impressive. Russia, a couple of defensive moments that they won't look back on too fondly, I think, certainly helped Belgium, but all over pretty dominant. And I'd also like to credit Yuri Tielemans. Saw a stat that this was his 73rd match of the past 12 months. Didn't look it at all. He plays games at his pace, and he is... He sometimes looks effortless, but the way he manages to control and dictate tempo is very, very special.
I feel that part of the step up for Yuri Tielemans has been he is more one touch. He is more just give it and go and give it and go. And he doesn't necessarily look to control the ball. And when you do that and you have that quality in front of you, it's just so dangerous, isn't it? Even Andy, we saw off the bench, actually, Eden Hazard, we know he's had his injury problems. We knew that De Bruyne and Witzel did not even travel to St. Petersburg for this one. But we saw some of those little Eden Hazard touches, didn't we, in that second half when he came on?
Yeah, we really did, Rob. And I think that's what Roberto Martinez will be looking for. That he can play some moments, maybe in this group stage, which Belgium will hope to win with comfort, and they will do if they play like that. There's no doubt about that, because they are extremely good, and you got the feeling that they weren't quite at full throttle still, and they still managed to win with something to spare. So he'll hope to see some of those moments from Eden Hazard building up to giving him more and more as they go on. And you know, if Belgium are at a stage where Eden Hazard can peak in the quarterfinals, then they'll really be in business.
And let's not remember, they went out in the quarterfinals, of course, disappointingly in 2016 at the hands of Wales, surprisingly. But look at that qualifying campaign. They won all 10 of their games, including two wins against Russia, who they beat in their opening group game. By the way, Romelu Lukaku getting the UEFA start of the match. Unsurprising, really, for his stellar performance. Finland take on Russia next in St. Petersburg, and then it's Denmark versus Belgium in Copenhagen once again. Okay, let's go to Group A now. Euro 2016 semi-finalist Wales drew 1-1 with Switzerland at the Baku Olympic Stadium.
Switzerland looking to pick up where they left off. Oh, Braylon Bono, the star that the Swiss hoped would shine brightly on the big stage. Here, Wales have improved. Kiefer Moore, restored to the Wales starting lineup, has scored a goal for them at the European Championship.
So that is how the game unfolded. And I tell you what, Chris, I loved that second half. Wasn't that great fun watching Wales fight back and get their point?
Yeah, because it was cagey in the opening period. It was searingly hot in Baku, and maybe that slightly played a part in that. But after Wales equalised, Switzerland then suddenly thought, we really need to win this game, because they could have been 2 or 3 nil up before Kiefer Moore scored. And to be honest, we could have at least had 4 or 5 goals in that second half. Both goalkeepers were excellent, Danny Ward in particular. And I think Switzerland will come away. I think we heard Rob Page and a few of the players saying that felt like a win. And Switzerland rather trudged off at the end thinking, if we played that game 20 times, we'd win it on 19 occasions. And Wales with a plucky point, and it might just be a key one in the final shake-up.
Well, I sort of like the Rob Page as well, because, you know, a lot of the time you'll hear from a head coach, they'll play it rather diplomatically, but he was like, no, that felt like a win.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, he had a big beaming smile on his face as well.
Let's hear from Captain Gareth Bale, but first, that goal scorer, Kiefer Moore.
Yeah, it's great personally, but, you know, I think it's a good start for us. You know, we would have liked to win, but to take a draw from the first game to put us in a good position is everything for us. It's never good going a goal down, but for us to, you know, get a goal back and eventually, you know, see the game out as such, yeah, it's a big positive for us. obviously this is a big occasion, and I've loved every second of it.
Obviously a hard game. I think both teams try to play. Obviously an opening game, so it was a little bit tense. But I think it's not a bad result, a 1-1 draw, and we take the positives and we go on to the next. You go 1-0 down, and you can really crumble. But I think we showed a lot of character, a lot of grit, determination, like we always do. And we showed our class to keep playing and fight for the goal back. And it was good to get the equaliser.
Captain Gareth Bale, fascinating, by the way, hearing from some of his former Wales teammates this week, Gareth Bale. The fact that previously in that Wales camp, the guys who were maybe the elite players playing at the best clubs in Europe, they had a bit of a clique in the squad. This is going back years now. But Bale really is the guy who has brought everybody together. Yeah. You know, he's a guy with loads of Champions League titles. He's brought them all together. And, you know, I'm sure a guy like Kiefer Morandi would have been looking at Gareth Bale when he first got the call up and thought, wow, I'm playing with this guy now. But he made his mark with a booming header. That was great to see.
Yes, it was. And he took it really, really well. It was a really clever run, I thought. And it was important because Wales had relatively few chances as well. Of course, Kiefer Moore nearly scored in the first half, and it was a brilliant save from Jan Sommer. And that's a real mark of a great goalkeeper, isn't it? A goalkeeper who can be sitting on his hands for a lot of the game, and when he has to do something, does it brilliantly well. But, you know, he really had to take that chance in the second half more because there wasn't that much created. But Wales showed really tremendous grit in that. And I think to not lose the first game is absolutely imperative. You know, there seems to be a feeling in the Welsh camp that there is an opportunity against Turkey. Of course, they were one of the fancy dark horses before the start of the tournament. And we know they've got informed players in the club game, particularly the three at Lille, led by Burak Yilmaz. But having said that, Wales are getting that feeling, aren't they, from Euro 2016 all over again.
Yeah.
And they will want to take that opportunity and take advantage of any dented confidence in the Turkish camp.
It finished 1-1, and it means the group looks like this right now. So Italy top with 3 points, Switzerland and Wales on one each, and Turkey bottom after their defeat on Friday at the hands of the Italian national team. We will get to Saturday's games very shortly, but don't forget we have fantasy football on Euro2020.com and the app we're all playing on the Euro Show. This is the part of the programme where we bring you team news from those sides involved in the coming days. It may help you make some of those tweaks as well. So Chris, you've been pinging around the camps, checking in with the reporters, looking at what's happening. Italy, of course, only played on Friday night, but there's team news coming out from there already.
Yeah, because Alessandro Florenzi came off at half-time. He's in my fancy team, by the way, and that wasn't good news for me. Has picked up a calf injury. He's going to be assessed daily. Whether he is fit for Wednesday against Switzerland, we will see. But Alessandro Florenzi with a calf problem. That was the only blot on the Italy notebook, really, after their impressive win on Friday.
Okay, so what about the Czech Republic versus Scotland? Scotland, of course, back a Euro. Those sides meet on Monday.
Yeah, they do. So bad news for the Czech Republic goalkeeper, Jiří Pavlenka. He's had to withdraw with a back injury. Tomáš Kubek has been called up. It means that Sevilla's Tomáš Vašlík, almost certain to start in Glasgow in a couple of days' time. From a Scottish point of view, there was a bit of a worry. Kieran Tierney, it suddenly was reported that he missed training on Friday. Massive player for them, of course. Yeah. Assistant coach John Carver said he's absolutely fine. He's just on a different programme to some of the other players. And I think we are seeing that after such a long, condensed season with players finishing their campaigns across Europe at different times. I think we are seeing quite a few coaches just be that bit extra cautious in the opening game and to let players sometimes decide what they need to do and trust them that they know what is best in order to get them in top shape.
And Poland have got some issues. We mentioned it on the show yesterday, Chris, obviously up front. Some in other departments of the pitch as well now ahead of facing Slovakia on Monday.
Yeah, Jan Bednarik looks like he might just have joined the injury list, training away with the rest from the rest of the team. Again, we don't know whether he's going to be fit. They play against Slovakia. Ivan Schrantz missed training today for them with a thigh problem.
By the way, Thomas Meunier picking up 15 points in fantasy football for Belgium. And if there is an injury at right wing back, you'd imagine he could come in to the starting 11.
Yeah, of course, Timothy Castagne was forced off for him, and we wait to see if Timothy Castagne will be fit enough to play in Belgium's second game. I was just delighted that I ummed and ahed about what really expensive centre-forward to pick.
You went Lukaku.
I went Lukaku.
Andy, by the way, quickly to you, how's your fantasy team looking right now?
Much better after that Belgium game.
Same here.
I also picked Lukaku, Youri Tielemans, and Thibaut Courtois is my goalkeeper, but I'm very much looking forward to the tournament debut of Antoine Griezmann, who's my captain. I'm expecting a lot from him.
Okay, coming up, we'll look at Sunday's games, including that mouthwatering match between England and Croatia.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
You're listening to the Euro Show with me, Rob Daly, Chris Parrott and Andy Brassel. Okay, time to preview Sunday's matches. Chris, what have we got coming up?
Three more games, Rob. Cannot wait. Starts at Wembley. England against Croatia at 3 o'clock. Then after that, we go to Group C. That's in Group D, by the way, England against Croatia. Then it's Group C. Huge moment for North Macedonia. Their first ever match on the major international stage. Looking for Finland, perhaps, for a bit of optimism after their victory. They go to Austria, or they face Austria in Bucharest. And then the late game is as well in Group C. It is in Amsterdam as the Netherlands face Ukraine. And just a reminder, by the way, again, the top two teams in each group go through to the last 16, plus the four best third-placed teams.
OK, well, let's start then with England versus Croatia at Wembley. We spoke to England manager Gareth Southgate earlier in the week, and he admits that playing at their home ground could give his team an upper hand as they aim to end 55 years of hurt.
Yeah, I think the possible advantage is clear to everybody, but I think what we have focused on is, firstly, I don't think you should ever look beyond the qualifying group. You have one objective in the first stage of the tournament, and that's to get out of your group. And that might take 6 points, that might take 4 points, that could be anything, really. And I never think we should look too far ahead. Of course, we want to be here for the seven games, and we are preparing on that basis. But yeah, we shouldn't start thinking about semi-finals and finals before we're, you know, in a quarter-final, and there's a long way to go before we get to that point.
You start against Croatia. How important is a winning start in the tournament? Are your England team now better equipped to beat Croatia than you were 3 years ago in that semi-final?
I think that we are a different team with different experiences. Our more experienced players have had a lot more big matches together. All of our players have had more big matches with their clubs. But we also have a lot of very young players and relatively inexperienced internationals, where Croatia have a very similar look when I look at the team. They're so close. They're a team of warriors who fight for the shirt, who fight for the flag. They've got technically brilliant players, so we've got huge respect for them. We've played them three times in competitive games in the last 4 years, and every game has been really, really tight, and we've got massive respect for them, and I have huge respect for the coach. He's done an amazing job, and I think he's a really good person.
In terms of the team's tactical evolution, it was the 3-5-2 in Russia, and then you had the 4-3-3, for example, in Seville. I don't know if you have a preferred tactic, but there's been talk about maybe you playing the back three again because of Harry Maguire situation.
I think over the last 12 months in particular, we've played with a back three and with a back four, and we feel we need the flexibility to be able to do that. I think in international football, you want to get your best players on the field in the formation that suits them the most, and we've found different ways of doing that depending on who we've had available and also the strengths of the opposition. So going back to Euro 96 under Terry, we played a different formation for every game, and he was very specific, but the players were always in roles on the field that suited their strengths and helped to mask the weaknesses that we had as a team. And I think that's probably the start point for us as a coaching staff.
It's funny, isn't it? Terry Venables playing a different formation every game.
I actually kind of chuckled when I heard that. It was very successful. They made the semi-finals and they were Gazza's bootlaces away from making the final, of course.
Yeah, and the Gareth Southgate penalty away from continuing that shootout, of course, that famous shootout against Germany. But you do hear it a lot when managers are pressed and head coaches are pressed on formation. They're keen to always bring it back to philosophy. So, Andy, do you think it matters too much? 3-4 at the back, or the media overthinking this one?
I wonder if 3 gives England a little bit more flexibility. I think the fact that they've got a lot of really good fullbacks who can play wing back in the squad, maybe that helps. Maybe, as we were hearing there from reporter Simon, that the Harry Maguire thing changes it. We'll have to wait and see. And I think there is an understanding amongst all these coaches that it's the long game. And, you know, Gareth Southgate himself talked about that. But especially the fact they've got a little bit more in the squad. They're planning not just for one game, but maybe a number of games going forward. And England will hope a number of games going forward as well. And I just think as well, if you look at the players who played directly around Harry Kane, I think if you've got wide, if you've got wing backs, that helps those players who are in that nominal front three, because they like to be a little bit more infield, whether it's Sterling, whether it's Rashford. You want them in that sort of inside sort of position rather than as a touchline hugger. Really, the only touchline hugger in there is Jadon Sancho, and those wing backs can do the other stuff. So for me, I think the 3 at the back would be my favourite. But I feel that with Harry Maguire in, England are capable of doing both.
And I think as the tournament goes on, we will see England change formations match upon match and maybe in match as well. I just quickly jotted down the dilemma, if you like, that Gareth Southgate has, or the multiple choices he has to make with an incredible squad. Who replaces Harry Maguire, and do they play 3 or 4 at the back? Who starts at right back?
Yeah.
Who plays alongside Declan Rice in central midfield?
Yeah.
And who on earth plays behind or with Harry Kane going forward? Yeah. I mean, there are going to be a lot of disappointed players. But again, I mean, I'm sure that Gareth Southgate will be saying, look, you have to, whoever plays, you have to absolutely perform. Otherwise, I've got 3 or 4 guys on the bench who I can bring on.
OK, Andy, so who are you playing then behind Harry Kane? If you're playing 3 at the back, are you then playing 2 there?
I like
two
this.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, let's put Andy on the spot.
Oh, absolutely.
Come on, Andy. Come on, Andy.
Ideally, in midfield, my 2 are Declan Rice and Jude Bellingham.
Yep.
I think Bellingham has to play. Having seen pretty much every match he's played for Borussia Dortmund this season, you've got to forget about his age. It's not important. He's way beyond that. Physically, in terms of his maturity as well, tactically, I think he can be a huge asset to England in this tournament. I would pop Mason Mount in front of him. My front three would be Kane, Foden, Sancho. Sancho won't get the nod, but I would love him to.
I actually would play Sancho. I think you do want someone who would, I know he's, and you're right to mention Andy, he's not quite the same as Sterling and Rashford in that position, is he?
No.
But I would like to see someone who wouldn't be afraid to break in behind Harry Kane. And, you know, we saw Heung-Min Son do it so well for Spurs this season. Chris, you quickly before we hear from one of the England players.
I just think he will play one of his speed merchants. He won't play all of Grealish, Foden and Mount. I think you will have either Sterling or Rashford or Sancho. But it's going to be very, very interesting when that team news drops, because the whole of England is waiting to see which of Gareth Southgate's stars he actually chooses in his first 11.
England defender Kieran Trippier has been speaking about England's preparations ahead of their opening game.
Obviously, playing at home and being here at St George's and the whole facilities is different. But in Russia, it was brilliant from start to finish, really. We had a really good squad. You know, we all just clicked. We'd done very well in the tournament, come over so many obstacles, but I feel like now it's a totally different team. Since back in Russia, we're at St George's Park, everything's here for us. We feel at home, which is important, because we want to be away for a long time. So I feel we're all in a good place, and hopefully that can set us off now for the first game. some fans will be back as well, which is brilliant. Playing at Wembley, it's a Euros, you know, for the majority of the boys, it's their first tournament. Like you said, not played at Wembley in front of fans, so I think especially all the players in there will be itching to get going now. But it's an exciting time for everybody, even myself. And I know everybody's just can't wait to get started now, but we've got a preparation to do before the game, and then I think all the players will take it in.
Kieran Trippier must be buzzing after winning La Liga with Atletico in Spain this season. Another player who plays his football in Spain, Luka Modric, has been speaking to the press and through a translator. He doesn't agree that England are a better team than Croatia.
When it comes to the prognosis of the English national team, that they are better in every part of the field, well, I wouldn't go too far into their details of those analyses. I think the pitch is going to be the only place where tomorrow we're going to show who's going to be better and who's going to win.
These two countries, Andy, have actually been relatively intertwined, haven't they? I think even back to 2008 Euro qualifying, Croatia winning at Wembley, World Cup semi-final, the Nations League recently. Do you think Croatia are a bit more evenly matched than others have made out, like Modric is saying?
Yes, and I think the historical resonance in these games is something that's really important. Now, England versus Croatia feels like a really titanic matchup. It feels like something that's historically important. I was at that Nations League game at Wembley, and the way that the atmosphere seeped out of the stadium momentarily when Andrei Kramaric gave the visitors the lead, that sense so soon after the 2018 World Cup from the England supporters of, oh no, not again, not again. I think that was really important, and it was a really galvanizing experience for Gareth Southgate and his players, how they managed to come back and win that game in the final quarter. But it's something that means a lot to both sides for that reason. And I think the team that's going to win this game eventually, if there's to be a winner, will be the team that manages to divorce themselves from the emotion of that a little bit, because it feels, as you say, that there've been so many huge games between England and Croatia. It's going to be difficult to find that composure, and that's why I think midfield is the key part for controlling this game.
Yeah, and you think along with Luka Modric is going to be Mateo Kovacic, who came back into fitness at the end of the season. He was joking that he knows everything about Mason Mount. He's going to tell his teammates how to get the better of Reece James if he plays. And I also pick up on another thing that Luka Modric said in his press conference. He said, there are big expectations from our people as well, and we expect a lot from ourselves. Many of this group reached a FIFA World Cup final, you know, and I think sometimes ahead of major tournaments, we've seen this before, and England have been surprised. I don't think the players have. Perhaps some of the public have been surprised by the quality, and Croatia are coming to Europe with a real sense that they can go deep, deep into this tournament.
And you talked about Luka Modric there before, Chris. I mean, it sounds like almost disingenuous to talk about him as a surprise player, because obviously everyone knows how great he is, and he's a Ballon d'Or winner and he's a World Cup finalist last time out. I think it is worth reiterating that Modric is just coming off the back of his best season for Real Madrid in quite a long time. He's had a better season this season than he did either the season before or the season after the World Cup. When a lot of people were talking about him winding down, maybe him going to Serie A to play off a season or two at a slightly lower intensity and maybe slightly lower expectations even than Real Madrid. But in a season where Zinedine Zidane had a lot of injuries, had a lot of absences, wasn't able to rotate as much as he wanted, particularly in midfield, Modric has been consistently outstanding. And when he's in the moment, to think he could be better than he was at the 2018 World Cup, I mean, that's quite a scary prospect.
This is what he said. It is not just an honour, but a duty to play for Croatia. Mason Mount was talking about how much he admires him. Let's get on to the fact, very briefly, that England do have this home advantage. Wembley, Roberto Martinez was sort of throwing that back at England, saying, if you go all the way, you're playing all your games at Wembley, basically. Luka Modric was saying it, people trying to put pressure on England because they do have this advantage. And of course, the final is at Wembley in 2021.
Yeah, and England,
do you think it's an advantage?
Yes, it is, because you know, England very, very rarely lose at Wembley. You look at their record, and you know, the fact that they can train at St George's Park, where they've really made it a home. Gareth Southgate personally put lots of pictures in his players' rooms, of family, of things like that. And you heard from Kieran Trippier there, this is a very happy camp. This is a group of players who enjoy playing for England, and there aren't any cliques and things like that. We saw that at the FIFA World Cup when they reached the last four, and that's why there is so much expectation. I don't sense that the England players mind people trying to, you know, say, well, you're the favourites. I think actually they'll take that and think, yeah, well, why not? They look around the dressing room and they see some of the best players at this summer's tournament.
So England take on Croatia at Wembley in Group D. The other game in Group D involving the Czech Republic and Scotland comes the day after. So let's move to Group C for Sunday's fixtures, starting with Austria against competition debutant North Macedonia in Bucharest. First, let's hear from Austria's goalkeeper Daniel Backman. He says his nation aren't here to make up the numbers.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think Austria, I think we've never won a game at European Championships. Obviously, that's the first step, you know, to overcome that on Sunday, you know, to win that game. You know, we want to go, obviously, on Sunday and win that game and, you know, put a, I wouldn't say put a statement out, but just, you know, show people that, that we're here now and, you know, we're ready for the big time, basically. You know, you can't rule anything out. And, you know, I mean, as a player, you know, I'm going there and want to win the European Championship, of course, you know, otherwise I wouldn't have to go there. You know, that's what I want to do. And I'm sure, you know, the 25 other boys here will tell you the exact same. You know, we want to win the European Championship at the end of the day, like every other team that goes there. But yeah, like I said, the first step will be win on Sunday, go out, make it out of the group. And then, like I said, take it game by game and see how far we can go.
That is the accent of a man who's been playing his football in England for a decade, isn't it? Daniel Backman, the Austrian goalkeeper, who gets the nod. That was a question mark in terms of the Austria team selection. Andy, who are the players to look out for from an Austria point of view? They came second in their qualifying group behind Poland, ahead of their opponent North Macedonia.
Yes, that's right. And of course, David Alaba is always the go-to. I feel what's been a difficulty almost for Austria over the years, it's a little bit like the Gareth Bale syndrome. Wales found the right spot for him. I'm not convinced Austria have quite through various eras for David Alaba, because he can do so much. You feel he doesn't want to be tucked away at left back or centre half. So is it centre midfield? Is it left midfield?
I saw him in a number 10 choice. Position at Euro 2016 against Portugal, I think.
Exactly. There's an incredible amount of choice because he's such a talented footballer. And as we found out in the pandemic, he's also the loudest man on the pitch. So he coaches his players as the game goes along. So his leadership is hugely important, of course. But I think as well we have to look at Marcel Sabitzer, who's no longer a surprise to any follower of European football. He's been fantastic for RB Leipzig for a very long time now. He can do everything in midfield. He can do the whole box-to-box business. He can score goals. He can defend. He can give shape to the team. But I guess the one who might be a little bit more under the radar for people has to be Sasha Kolasinac, because he is a player who has had a really strange career to date so far. Only 23 years old, but has missed a lot of football through injury. And then all of a sudden, a brilliant season. First top flight season for Stuttgart this season. People will look at him as a 2 metre striker and look at him as a particular type of striker. But he's really got great craft to him, great knowledge of the game. He clearly didn't tactically stand still while he was out through injuries. 16 Bundesliga goals for a mid-table team. It's very, very impressive as well. And of course, because of his height, he can circumvent that need to play good football.
I heard the coach today saying that Marko Arnautovic, he was sort of inferring he might be more likely to start on the bench. Do you think Kolasinac will start, Andy?
I think he should. I think he has to. Because it's not just about pedigree. I think when you're coming into a major championship, it's about form as well. And he's certainly got that.
Well, we wait to see if Julian Baumgartling as well will be fit enough for the central midfield. Xaver Schlager, robust central midfielder, really like him at Wolfsburg. He'll be getting stuck into the tackles with that blonde ponytail. And interesting as well, Andy, that you mentioned David Alaba, you know, is the man who orchestrates. I wonder if Thomas Müller's rubbed off on him, because, do you know, the German players call Thomas Müller Radio Müller, because he's always babbling away while they're playing and training, just constantly on air almost. That's not bad, is it? You expect that from Thomas Müller.
I wonder if it might annoy some players as well.
I'm sure it does.
But there's no one can ever say anything to Thomas Müller given what he's achieved in the game.
They've never got through the group stage of the competition. Let's see what they can do in their third appearance. They take on North Macedonia, Chris, who are making their first ever. What does this mean for them? They came through, and this is the beauty of it, really, those new, relatively new, Nations League playoff rounds.
Yeah, because they won their Nations League group. They therefore were eligible for one of the final slots through the playoffs, and then they managed to battle through. And look, this means everything. It is one of the greatest sporting days in their history, reasonably short history, of course. And they have some fine players. Goran Pandev was speaking before this match in Bucharest with real emotion about what it means for this group of players. And I just wonder, you know, they would have watched, I'm sure, the Finland victory, which we know the circumstances that it came in. But that surely will not rub off on them, but that will give them even more hope. And they'll look back to Iceland 5 years ago and they'll think, well, why not? And particularly in this section, along with Netherlands and Ukraine, they haven't been drawn into a group like Hungary have with Poland, Germany and France. You know, this is one I think Goran Pandev said, we haven't just come here to play three games. And if they can get off to a good start, and they could easily get a point, I think. They might even win the game. And if they do, suddenly that momentum builds. And back home in Skopje in North Macedonia, the support for these players will be immense. It will be enormous.
And it's worth noting as well, they beat Germany only in a friendly, in a World Cup qualifier, ending Germany's 35-game unbeaten run in FIFA World Cup qualifiers.
Away from home.
Yeah, Andy, how did they do it?
Well, the thing is, they didn't steal that game. I think that's the most important thing to say. They didn't just defend and play on the break. They defended very well. And when they got opportunities, they got them on target. I think they have six efforts on goal in that game and four of them on target. I think what's really important for them is, A, when they're coming up the pitch, they've got very good wing-backs. Alioski of Leeds, who's just leaving Leeds on the left-hand side. But also Ristovski, who did very well in Portugal for Sporting. He can also play as the third centre-back. But they've got that craft in midfield as well. So I think there's the assumption that everything needs to go through Pandev. But you look at Bardi, what he can do from set pieces, the Levante player, and also what he can do from open play. I think he'll go on to greater and greater heights as he gets further into his 20s. And Elif Elmas, who's not always had an easy time since he's arrived from Turkey to Napoli, which has been a big step up, but can burst forward into the box to score goals. So they've got myriad threats, and it's not a one-dimensional team.
It's not. And we've already had some fun with North Macedonia and with Austria, Rob, today, because they were due to be training in Bucharest. It absolutely poured down.
Did it?
And in the end, to protect the pitch, the Austrians had to go and train at Steaua Bucharest Stadium. There was a great moment when Backman, who we heard there, basically he said, yeah, it's absolutely fine, and then splashed into a puddle, joking. It was torrential rain. So let's hope, because we've been blessed by some very fine weather today and yesterday in Rome, but not in Bucharest today. And the players will certainly help that by kickoff tomorrow, that it might be a little better in that part of Romania.
And the final game in Group C is the final game on Sunday, the Netherlands versus Ukraine from the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam. Chris, quick bit of team news, perhaps, first for the Urania with that home advantage too.
Yeah, they are going to be without Matthijs de Ligt, one of their key centre-backs. And, of course, there's no Virgil van Dijk, so that would have been the Netherlands' first choice back too, and neither are going to play. Interesting from Frank de Boer, he said he's had a muscle injury. He said, had it been the final, I probably wouldn't have left him out, but we're not taking any unnecessary risks. And from Ukraine's point of view, Andrei Shevchenko told our reporter Bogdan Buga that Viktor Sigankov won't play due to a calf problem as well. Again, he doesn't want to be risked. I think it's another case after a long season of coaches just thinking, this is game one. Potentially you can go through if you finish third. There is no point in risking any key player, any player, frankly, who then might be out of the whole tournament. But this is going to be a great occasion. We know the Dutch have missed the last two major international tournaments. It's great to have them back. Now, can they make an impact? And I know we talked about it in the official preview podcast, but Andy Brassel, that debate about whether Frank de Boer should play four at the back, 4-3-3 the Dutch way, or whether he should change to five at the back continues to rumble on.
Well, yeah, there were some fans who flew a plane over training yesterday with Frank de Boer play 4-3-3 attached to a banner to the back.
That's how committed they are to that formation,
they really
the
are.
Dutch people, yeah.
But it's something that's cultural, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's something
yeah.
that's really part of the Dutch football supporters' psyche. So it's quite controversial. Funnily enough, the last time someone chose to mess with this was Louis yeah. van Gaal, 2014 World yeah. Cup in Brazil. And, you know, if they were to get a result, I'm not sure they can get quite a result as a 5-1 victory over Spain, over the reigning champions in the first game, because Ukraine are quality opposition. They are not the reigning champions. But, you know, a solid start would definitely help his cause.
Andy, what shape do you think that the Dutch are in going into this? They finished second in their qualifying group behind Germany. There is, it's undeniable. It feels almost lazy punditry, but there is so much responsibility on the shoulders of Memphis Depay to provide that attacking guile in key moments.
Yeah, and that's right. And he will embrace that, I think. You know, he's on the brink of a big move elsewhere after leaving Lyon. And the reason he's able to do that is, in his words, I became a man in Lyon. And he means off and on the pitch, of course. But the fact is, he's in terrific form at the moment. We talked about Lukaku earlier and how he's, you know, almost needed more games at the end of this season. I feel it's the same with Memphis as well. You look at the way he's played in the friendlies. I think they're in a good position of flexibility because he can play up front on his own, drop out, be difficult for centre-halves to pick up. And we saw in the friendly with Georgia, he can link with a big man in Wout Weghorst as well. So that's some great options for Frank de Boer.
I'm actually intrigued to see how much football Wout Weghorst gets, having been a relatively late call-up. There was a lot of clamour for him to be in the squad and how much football he gets.
He cried in that interview with Wolfsburg when he was asked about his call-up.
And then scored as well his first international goal just before in one of the friendlies. Ukraine, Andy, what to expect from them? I've seen a few people who fancy Andrei Shevchenko's team could make a bit of an impact.
Well, they were brilliant in the qualifiers, Chris. We can't forget that. Took 4 points off Portugal. And that game in Kiev that they closed out with 10 men, I mean, that was an occasion for the ages. And you need that, I think, sometimes under a coach to build confidence and to build public support and momentum. I feel that's really important. Since then, they've been and got a draw in the World Cup qualifiers, the European World Cup qualifiers at the Stade de France, which is very impressive at any time. So I think they can be more front foot. They can defend if they need to as well. And when we're talking about informed players, I think Ruslan Malinovsky can make a huge impact at this tournament in terms of unlocking the door. He's had a great finish to the season with Atalanta. And also, I think you look at Roman Yaremchuk, another player who could be looking for a step up after a very good season with Ghent. And he got that winner against Northern Ireland in the friendly recently.
Certainly did. The Netherlands take on Ukraine in Amsterdam at 2100 CEST on Sunday in Group C. That should be great, seeing those orange colours as well. It really feels like an international tournament when you see. Okay, Chris, quickly, let's have those fixtures again for Sunday. Remind our listeners that one.
Yeah, three more games. England against Croatia at 3 p.m. CEST at Wembley. Then it's Austria against North Macedonia. And we finish with that match in Amsterdam. Netherlands against Ukraine at 9 p.m. CEST. And we'll be on shortly after that one ends.
Okay, finally, some further thoughts on Christian Eriksen. A reminder that he is in a stable condition in hospital, has been awake as well. And Chris, there's been so much support from the great football community.
Yeah, there has, including Germany's official account. A really nice picture of the entire Germany squad with a thumbs up with a picture of Christian Eriksen in action just behind them. And Harry Kane has tweeted within the last hour, of course, a teammate, a long-time friend and teammate of Christian Eriksen at Tottenham Hotspur, the England captain, saying, "Chris, I'm sending all my love to you and your family. Stay strong, mate, with a blue heart."
Okay, more on that, I'm sure, in the next edition of The Euro Show. Andy, thank you very much for your company this evening.
Thank you.
That's all for now. Remember that you can listen to us live every match day on The Euro Show, which is available just minutes after the final game on the official app and Euro2020.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast using your favourite provider.
Yeah, we'll react to the day's matches. We'll look ahead to whatever games are taking place the next day too. And we've got reporters in every host city and with every team. You really won't miss anything at this summer's Euro.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you very much to you listening as well. We will see you next time on The Euro Show.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.